Well, hey there, and welcome to the Bible Geeks Weekly Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Every 7 weeks, we take a break to recharge and regroup, and this happens to be our week off.
But we'll be back next week with a brand new episode.
So while we're off, here's one of our favorites from the past.
We're also in the middle of this hormonal thunderstorm. Well, hello there, and welcome to the Bible Geeks Weekly Podcast. This is episode 42. I'm Brian Sheely.
I'm Ryan Joy.
And thanks so much, everyone, for tuning in. We are continuing our discussions about young folks. I'm gonna own it.
Just take it on.
I'm owning it, man. We're going to be talking on this episode about making no provisions for the flesh. We're going to Romans chapter 13, verse 14, all about dating, getting married. Things I haven't had to think about for, I don't know, quite a while, I guess.
As Adrian and I say to each other, quoting an old movie, tell me I'll never have to be out there again.
Yep, but if we had to go back in time and talk to our younger selves, I think I'd have quite a bit to say about this subject. So
For sure.
We'll get into that in a little bit. But before we do, we have a Jesus Said segment, and I have a verse for you, and it's from Matthew chapter 5, verse 27. And he says, you have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body go into hell. So what do you think?
It is a powerful statement to equate lust with adultery, to equate that coveting in the heart with the actual act is a sobering thought and gets to so much of the way Jesus taught and described the kind of change he wants to make in us. What that lust does is it starts to damage you and damage your relationship with your spouse, your future spouse. That lust is you taking into your heart something that doesn't belong to you, doesn't belong in your heart, and therefore, of course, it damages your relationship with God as well. And so the alternative that Jesus prescribes is just as violently shocking, and intentionally so, of course. This idea of cutting out whatever you need to cut out to keep away from that hellfire of destruction that comes with these kinds of destructive acts.
And it seems so extreme, but Jesus here is really equating what internal damage, like you said, can be done with this lust-filled heart. He's saying it's actually better if you do physical damage rather than this internal, invisible, spiritual damage. And that doesn't seem on the surface like it should equate. Like, I think if I were to pluck out my eye or cut off my hand, that would be much more extreme than if I were doing this internal damage of just lusting after someone. But Jesus is equating these two things, or at least saying that the internal damage is far worse than the external damage.
Yeah, absolutely. We get away with thinking, well, it didn't hurt anyone because nobody knows but me and God, or thinking that there is no damage and therefore no destruction, but it has already happened, you know, at that point. You are damaging that relationship in the same way as actually committing adultery. And if you, again, aren't yet married, and we're talking to young people, especially thinking about these things in this series, again, you are damaging yourself and even damaging that future relationship. And the point is not that, you know, you can never come back from these things, or that God doesn't forgive and God can't make you whole through his grace, but you know, there are consequences to sin. And you know, if you start a practice of lust lustful intent, to use the English standards phrase, and this becomes habitual, this can really just corrode your heart and make it harder and harder for you to have the kind of faithfulness to your future spouse that you want to have. You know, to say nothing, of course, when we talk about sin, we're talking first and foremost about that relationship with God and what he wants for you and that heart of holiness. But it's also, I think, helpful to always remember in all of these things that his commandments are for your good always. And he's trying to guide you in the path of blessing so that you can not only have fellowship with him, but have that kind of life and relationships and gifts that he wants for you now and into the future.
I kind of think back to Proverbs chapter 5 and chapter 6, walking in front of the door of the forbidden woman, and how we avoid that at all costs. We don't put ourselves in a situation where we are going to fall into that trap. And you can look at the example of David and his sin with Bathsheba as a perfect example of that. And all he had to do was stop it before it started, but he just let it snowball. And that's exactly what Jesus is warning about here. We've got to stop it at the source and do whatever it takes to make sure that we are not going too far, or we don't let it become more of a problem.
Yeah, whenever you read something as disturbingly strong of a statement as what Jesus says, you go to this extreme, and then you have to say, okay, well, if that's true, if it's better to cut off my right hand than to lose my whole life, then how much more is it better for me to cut off going to that place or watching that thing or being willing to have this kind of relationship?
Yeah, that's far less extreme.
Right, right. So Jesus' statement then gives us a principle to shape the kinds of changes that make a little more sense than cutting off your hand. Yeah. But you get it. You get the idea, of course.
So we talked last week about self-control. And I think when we're younger, finding self-control is very challenging. But we're also in the middle of this hormonal thunderstorm, right? We're learning about ourselves. We're feeling new feelings. And we're getting involved in relationships with people that we've never had before. I teach a class of 10 to 12 year olds, and we were just recently studying Proverbs chapter 5 and 6 about the forbidden woman. And I'm trying to convince them, and I don't think I did a good job at it, but I'm trying to convince them that not very long in the future, you guys are going to have feelings about other people, and you're going to look at a boy or a girl, and you're going to want to be in a relationship with them. And that was just blasphemy to them.
Gross.
Like, it, you know, they have cooties or whatever. And then you go a couple classes up, and it's like, oh, yeah, yeah, everybody's feeling that now.
Yeah, my son is still saying that he's never going to get married, but he's going to get a house next to us. But my daughter now has moved already, frighteningly, at the age of 7, from that idea that she's never getting married to, you know, starting to enjoy the princess romance stories of the Disney movies.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. We've got the same thing going on here. Somebody help me.
Yeah, there's a danger of this becoming like the gym teacher explaining health concepts to us here with you and me stepping too far away from Bible concepts.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think there's a natural transition in thinking about these things from talking about the lust of our heart in Matthew 5 to talking about the concept in the Bible of lasciviousness or of sensuality. Mm-hmm. Whenever you start acting on those lusts and not checking them, and that's really what we're talking about. I mean, nobody outside of pulpits and Bible classes, I think, uses the word lascivious anymore. Or licentious. But we're talking about unchecked desire. Whenever you start giving those desires their way, and that doesn't necessarily mean fornication.
Right.
another word we don't use outside of pulpits. It doesn't necessarily mean sexual immorality, but we're talking about all the things that lead up to it, as well as that sexual immorality. Whenever we start giving in to those desires and just letting them have their course. So, you know, the makeout sessions that, you know, you just let have their way, that is sensuality. You know, Galatians 5:19, one of the deeds of the flesh, that is that lasciviousness. And so what we have to start thinking about is if unchecked desire starts to do this, starts to become a sin in and of itself, how do we reasonably put checks on it?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a concept we talk about a lot of times as guardrails. I think it's a helpful metaphor.
I like what Job said in Job 31. And look, if you think this is just a problem for young people, then you're missing the boat, because even Job himself, who is an older man at the time when he was writing this, he said, I have made a covenant with my eyes. How then could I gaze at a virgin? The point that he's making here is he's put what Jesus was talking about there in Matthew chapter 5 and what you were just talking about in terms of guardrails. He's put some things in place to make it so that this isn't a problem for him. He's made a covenant mm-hmm. with his eyes. Like, he's having this conversation with his eyes. He's not going to look at things that he shouldn't look at.
Eyes, I want you to sign this contract.
Exactly.
I mean, a covenant's pretty serious.
Otherwise, yeah. I'm going to cut you out.
Right. A precursor to Jesus' words.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think one of the things I'd want to talk to myself about, my younger self, is the idea that the rules that you make, those guardrails, have to come from you to right. have value. That these principles that guide us don't come with a lot of rules. Mm-hmm. You know, there's this truth that lust is sin. There's this truth that unchecked action from that lust, that sensuality, is sin. And from that, we have to figure out, how do I make a covenant with my eyes, with my heart, with my body? How do I start to make a commitment to myself, mm-hmm. not anybody else, to start to figure out what is going to help me live this life that I'm committed to living? One of the most basic truths that we have to get, we have to just really humbly internalize, is 1 Corinthians 10:12, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall.
Sure.
And so then the next verse says, you know, no temptation has overcome you, but or has come to you, but that which is common to man, and God graciously gives us a way out of whatever temptation comes. But we have to recognize and just embrace this fact that there will come a time and a place and a situation where you are really going to have difficulty keeping yourself on the path, and God will give you a way out of it, and you have to find it. But the best thing you can do is try to avoid those situations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's this pray, God, lead me not into temptation, as Jesus says. Help me keep my steps away from even that place where I might fall. And so that's where those guardrails come in. And when we talk about guardrails, we're thinking of, or I think of those rails on the side of the road that go at the edge of the cliff, that, you know, maybe there's another 10 feet beyond those guardrails where you could have gone off the road and been okay. But if you pull it back, then you have more opportunity to be safe. And so these are commitments. These aren't, we don't want to confuse those guardrails as laws from God, but knowing what God has said and what God is trying to protect us from, we then, not placing things on other people, but upon ourselves, say, okay, here's what I'm not going to do. So I know you have thought about this idea. You know, we both have, in our youth and even beyond that, thought about what kind of guardrails then and now we would want to have in our lives in these kinds of areas. Do you have any thoughts, any guardrails you would want to suggest to your... To little Brian?
Yeah, I think a lot of it had to do when I was growing up, and we had a peer group within the church that was really good about this, I think, where when two people were dating, we would make sure that we were providing opportunities for everybody to get together in a public area where it was something that they could still be spending time with each other, but also in some way be accountable that other people were around. And I think that was something growing up that I saw and then I experienced, you know, when I was dating other people. But that, I think, is a great guardrail that maybe not you personally can implement, but that your peer group or people who you're close to can help you with. Having that kind of safety net from friends is a great thing that you can do even for other people. And that, I think, even extends out of the bounds of young people, even older people, middle-aged people, anyone else can be providing these opportunities for people to get together, these safe spaces that people can enjoy each other's company, get to know each other, and avoid these temptations to be alone with somebody who you're romantically interested in.
Yeah, yeah, it's great in, like you say, in groups of friends. I think it's really great whenever, I know it might sound pretty uncool to spend time with your parents and a date, but I think even just having like a family night and seeing if you have a family that will allow that, seeing them in that dynamic of your family. And, you know, that's hard for all of us to go into another family sometimes and just find our place when we're trying to make a good impression on everybody there. Yeah. But even if that relationship doesn't kind of keep going romantically, those relationships with your family, I know in Adrian, my wife's family, and in my family, there are people who kind of just became adopted as part of the family.
Sure.
Beyond that. And that's a blessing. And then, you know, again, these are not rules. It's not saying it's wrong to be together. But then, you know, if you say, okay, we need some time together, just alone to talk about things. Well, where are you going to be? And how late will you be out? You know, are you going to be in public places? Or are you going to go, you know, go to a private spot? You know, just making determinations about what is going to be best in that relationship.
I would say, I think everyone is different. And that's one of the reasons why I feel like you're placing a bunch of asterisks on this, because
I am.
You are making it clear that this is not a hard and fast rule. But at the same time, we are not very complicated when we are teenagers and when we are hormonally driven. We're basically all struggling with the same kinds of things. And I don't think it's bad at all to recommend that people, especially if they know themselves and they know where their relationship is, to avoid being alone in situations where you very quickly or easily could find yourself doing things that are lascivious or sensual. I don't think that's a bad thing, just to say that that's probably not the best situation for you. But
yeah,
the other part of this too, that I think is something maybe we don't think about as much when we're younger, is how something looks.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that we always do things with the mind of presenting ourselves to people, becoming fake or something like that, but just to say that there is influence that you have on even people who are younger than you. And if you show them by your example that you're being careful, that you're putting guardrails in place, that's going to help them a lot in their relationships when they get to that stage.
Yes.
Maybe that's not something you're really super concerned about when you're in the midst of it, but you can be a great example to somebody who's younger than you in the way that you're handling your relationships and the way that you have communicated your guardrails.
Well, and that goes back to our leadership episode where we just talked a couple of weeks ago about stepping up and saying, I'm going to set the example. I'm going to set the tone for the culture as much as is within me to be influential here. And what is your influence? What kind of culture are you setting?
Mm-hmm.
I really appreciate what you said. We aren't complicated, even as grownups. We aren't that complicated.
We'd
to think we're very complicated and that no one, especially no grownup, can understand. And I think that's where I am wanting any young person that's listening to this to hear this in in the best way possible, sure. that and not shut out, oh, another grown-up trying to make a new set of rules, but to make these rules, and it might be the probably the same rules you're going to hear from other people, make these guardrails, these, and rules isn't even the best word, but make these personal commitments about what you're going to say. I'll go this far and no further. It's about asking better questions than where is the line of sin?
Mm-hmm.
What we're talking about is wisdom, right? We're talking about living. The whole book of Proverbs and so much of the Bible has a lot to do with living without regret, living in a way that you'll have good consequences and be glad that you made this choice, even though it might have been hard in the moment, rather than making the choice that maybe was easy in the moment, and yet you live your life for years later wishing that you hadn't. And so asking questions like, what's the wise thing to do? What is the best thing to do?
I think that's super important too, because when I was younger, and I think everybody struggles with this at some point, so often you're not going to be able to go and find the specific verse that tells you exactly what you should do with your boyfriend or your girlfriend and how far you should go. You're not going to find a verse that tells you that. But you are going to find this wisdom about keeping pure and maintaining your godliness and maintaining your innocence and being the kind of example to others that you should be. You are going to find plenty of verses about those things. Just internalizing those concepts, those truths, and being able to have the kind of discernment based on that, have the kind of skill based on that, where you can know what the right thing to do is, you can do it, and then you can get good at doing it. Mm-hmm. And that will impact everything, not just in this conversation about purity in our relationships with someone we're in love with, but in everything. It's a fundamental skill that we need to develop to ask ourselves, what is the better choice right now? What should I be doing right now? And even if two things are good and you hold them up side by side, one of them is probably going to be a better choice.
We have come in these episodes in our DeLorean back to our past self to give some advice and hopefully a little bit of wisdom we've gained that we want to tell ourselves. I think a helpful thing for young people to do is to try to travel back to the future and go to your older self and look and see now, thinking back with perspective, on what are you going to be glad you did and what are you going to wish you didn't? And here's a really helpful perspective, I think. Think about your story. What do you want your story to be?
Mm-hmm.
You're already, even if you haven't met the one, you're already writing your story, and you're already writing, you know, if you end up being someone who's going to be married and have a life with a spouse, you're already writing your love story. You know, you're already figuring out who you are going to be.
Yeah.
And your choices now are affecting that future relationship. And if you are in a relationship now, what kind of story is this going to be? Is this going to be a story you're going to be glad to tell your kids about? And you're going to look back even privately and feel like, this is what I always wanted, this most important decision and part of my life outside of becoming a Christian to be, you know, mm-hmm. not just choosing the person you're going to marry. Maybe we can talk about that in a minute. But what does it look like in my life before we got married, as we kind of figured out, you know, there's very few romantic comedies about two married people, you know, taking the kids to school. Most of the story is about meet cutes, you know, when you meet cute and, you know, you're in the store and you knock over their cart and how did that happen? And then will they or won't they be together? And there's conflict. That story of how two people end up in this decision and in this new life after I do is a big part of the story of who you are, and it'll set a tone. So start from the beginning, setting a tone of godliness and love, real love, like agape love and holiness, and protect one another, protect one another's hearts, protect one another's purity, and protect one another either for that future relationship and for the Lord, or for the possibility that this isn't the relationship you'll be in forever, and how much of yourself and how much of them should be given in this relationship before you're married.
Well, and the question I think is a good one, really just setting yourself up to be in a position 10, 20, 30 years down the road and be able to ask, was I set apart for God when I was younger, or was I living like the world? And that's kind of what Paul talks about in 1 Thessalonians 4, verse 3, where he says, for this is the will of God for your sanctification, that you abstain from sexual immorality, that each one of you know how to control his own body in holiness and honor, not in the passions of lust like the Gentiles who do not know God. And so at some point, you're going to probably look back on your past life and you're going to say, was I set apart for God? Was I sanctified for God? Was I living in holiness and honor, controlling my body? Or was I living in passion? Was I just following my lust like the rest of the world around me? And we're going to get ourselves into a lot of trouble now and probably in the future if we've chosen the route of passion and lust. And that's hard to come back from. It's hard to unbreak that seal. You know, it's like putting toothpaste back in the tube. It's going to be a stain. It's going to be a regret that you're going to have. And we don't always think that forward thinking when we're that young, but it's something we need to be thinking about now. And there's a lot of ways we can watch ourselves and check ourselves and help other people to check themselves.
Yeah. And the other part of that is just recognizing and really appreciating how great marriage is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
If you're blessed to be married someday, this is more advice for little Ryan from me. It's worth it. It's worth it to say no right now and to keep yourself far from being controlled by those passions now in order to let those passions find their really wonderful place in God's creation of the marriage covenant. This is something God created as a gift. And whenever it's in the place that God created for it, you'll see how much you can just let go of so many of these boundaries and worries and say to your spouse someday, say, I'll never have to be out there again. You know, it's really a gift. And so seeing that ideal, that shining light at the end of the tunnel, boy, I just likened marriage to death, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. I heard it.
Seeing that thing that you're moving towards, I think also helps you kind of protect that gift by your choices now.
So maybe in transitioning this conversation, you're a teenager, you're getting to know somebody, you're getting closer to them, and at some point, you're probably going to start thinking about spending the rest of your life with this person. I know that was a situation I was involved in before I got married. That was a situation I was involved in before I got married to a few people. Not, I didn't get married to a few people, but I was thinking about what would it be like to marry this person multiple times when I met people. And it's a thought that we're all going to have as younger people looking to take the plunge. But I think there's a couple of things that maybe we should be thinking about along the way. And one of those things is something that I didn't really learn as much growing up as I did when I got older. That's the fact that early on in a relationship, it's less about love, even though we call it love, like love at first sight, or I'm in love with this person, or you might even tell somebody, I love you. It's less about love, and it's more about infatuation early on. And that's kind of something I wish I could go back and tell myself, that really those feelings that I'm having are less love kinds of feelings. And as you get into the Bible and you really start reading about love and learning about love, you understand what real love is. Real love is work. Go read 1 Corinthians 13. Real love takes effort. And that's why I think we call it falling in love, because it's not something we have a choice in, or it's not something that we really take very purposefully. And when you can realize that you're in the middle of an infatuation kind of situation, maybe that helps clarify the need to be careful with what you choose to do and what situations you put yourself in.
Yeah, maybe we can throw a link in our show notes back to our agape love versus agape love episode. The beauty of love is not found in that eros sensual attraction and just all about my pleasure. It absolutely, that's a part of the marriage relationship. But the beauty of love is seen best in Christ and in his relationship with his bride.
Ephesians chapter 5.
Right. Whenever you look at a married couple, whether they're newlyweds or middle age or they've been married for 50 years, and you see something that you say, oh man, what it would be like to have that as a young person, that's really what we're drawn to. That's what really what we don't maybe know how to get there yet. And that's what the Bible is trying to teach us. But that's the good stuff. When you can be in a partnership that is built on mutual trust and commitment to one another, that kind of love that seeks not its own, that kind of love that believes all things and hopes all things and rejoices in the truth, that is the kind of thing that makes life better and makes life richer, and that is a reflection of the life we'll have in eternity.
Yeah.
And one of the questions I always try to get young people to think about is, when you think about the kind of person you're looking for, it's great to make a list of those qualities that you want them to have, but also then reflect it back like a mirror. As you get clearer on what kind of person you're looking for, ask yourself, what kind of person is the person I'm looking for looking for?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, what are they looking for? And then I can get to work long before I even meet them, becoming that person.
Sure.
And so I can work on learning to love like Jesus loved. I can do that with my sister and my mom and my friend and all the people around me. I can love selflessly and be kind to and be a servant to and be a positive influence, taking a leadership role in that way. And that is shaping you into the kind of person that kind of person is looking for. And it's blessing you in so many ways.
I think sometimes it is an unpopular opinion to make a serious recommendation to somebody who's younger that they look for a partner who is a believer. And I think you will find yourself in a very difficult situation if you are looking to spend the rest of your life with someone who's not also interested in the Lord. And that seems to be a harder and harder thing to encourage people to do. You might look at other people and you might say, well, they married an unbeliever and then they had a good influence on them and they converted them to the Lord. And that's great. Those are wonderful situations, of course. But voluntarily getting yourself into that kind of situation, I think, is going to be very dangerous for you.
Exactly. The more clear you get on God's ideal for marriage and what you want your marriage to be, the more you'll want to have someone who is not only a Christian, but is a deeply committed Christian, is a disciple that is seeking to grow and has character traits, not just someone who has been baptized, but someone who is walking with Christ on a daily basis. I have
definitely
family and friends who married someone who was a Christian, and then after marriage, that person just wandered away from the faith and didn't really care. And they're maybe even in a more difficult place than those who married somebody who wasn't a Christian. And you can't control someone else's life. You can influence it. 1 Peter 3 talks about a woman who's married to someone who's an unbeliever, but it's really challenging. Anyone would tell you who is a Christian who's married to an unbeliever, I'm sure. It's not an easy way to live. And the way that you avoid that, don't date someone who's not a Christian, who's not really a committed believer trying to grow in the Lord, who is going to make you stronger rather than you trying to drag them along to where you need to be. You want to look for that person that whenever you're together, there's this dynamic of pushing each other to greater heights of spiritual development and closeness to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you're together, if you notice that prayer and conversations about the word and finding ways to serve people and to love people and to honor people, those are the kinds of things that you do together, then you're probably on the right track as you think about, maybe this is the kind of person that I want to share my life with and be a partner with in the Lord.
Having somebody in your life as a counselor or as somebody you can go to for advice and really being open to listening to them about the person that you're thinking about getting married to, if that's your parents or that's a grandparent or a friend, going to them and really asking them the sincere question of saying, is this person that I am going to make this lifetime commitment to the kind of person that they should be? Because I fully recognize right now, I may not be seeing things clearly.
Yeah, it's really hard to listen, but you will do yourself a service if you will really hear and consider the wisdom of wise counselors.
All right, so let's get into the challenge for this week. And it's really simple, but very hard to do. Establish guardrails. If you're dating, if you're thinking about dating, if you still think girls have cooties or boys have cooties, fine. But establish some guardrails. Think about what you're going to do in a situation where you might be tempted to do something that you shouldn't. And if you're older, if you're married, if you're somebody who's gone through this and you feel like this is something you dealt with long ago, throughout this conversation, we've been talking about this not only applying to these kinds of romantic relationships, but it applies everywhere. It's about being self-controlled. It's about making sure that we're not putting ourselves in situations where we shouldn't be. And so establish guardrails, whatever those are for you, whatever those look like for you, and maybe talk to your boyfriend or your girlfriend or somebody else about these things so that there's an established set of parameters there about what we will and will not do.
Yeah, the earlier we can establish those things, the better. And they're good for all of us. Wherever we are, whatever situation we're in, all of us have things that we need to protect ourselves from. And so all of us, whatever age we are, this is a good challenge for us to think about our guardrails.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning into the Bible Geeks podcast. You can find us on our website at BibleGeeks.fm. You can find show notes for this episode at BibleGeeks.fm/42. We are also on social media. We're on Facebook. We're on YouTube. Oh, we're on the Twitter, too. And Instagram, so come and find us.
All of the internets.
So come along and join us there. Thanks again for tuning in. And until next week, may the Lord bless you and keep you.
Shalom.